Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the Foreign Correspondents Club. My name is Keith Bradshaw. I'm the Hong Kong Bureau Chief for the New York Times, and I'll be your host today on behalf of the Foreign Correspondents Club Board. Before I introduce our guest, a couple of housekeeping notes, as always. First of all, everyone, please turn off your cell phones now, or at least put them on mute. We now put up all of our speeches on YouTube. Some of them get a lot of hits. David Tang a couple of weeks ago had 40,000 viewers. And so we really like for people here to be, and that was in the first day and a half. I don't know what the final total was, but anyway, we had a lot. We really like for people to be able to have good audio, so please turn off your cell phones now. Second of all, I'd like to remind you of our next event. On Monday of next week, the 14th, we have Mark O'Neill speaking. He's the author of several books. He's presented on books here before. His latest book is on the two National Palace Museums, that is to say, the one in Beijing, which has treasures, archaeological treasures discovered mainly since 1949, and then of course the National Palace Museum in Taipei, which has the imperial treasures that the nationalists took with them from really the 1300s up through 1949. With that, let me introduce our speaker today. Professor Baron Peter Piot is the director of the London School of Hygiene and Tropical Medicine. He's well known as the co-discoverer in 1976 of the Ebola virus. He's been very active in working on many issues of interest to those of us in Hong Kong ever since. He's followed issues like SARS, bird flu virus, and now most recently, I guess, the subject that everybody's wondering if it'll affect us here, which is the Zika virus, a subject of global interest, and particularly with the Olympics coming to Brazil. So with that, I give you Professor Piot. Thank you.
Well, thank you very much, and bon appétit, I should say, and happy International Women's Day today. Well, it's really a pleasure to be here in this historic place for many reasons, but one is a particular one, and that's that my predecessor, the first director of our school, was Patrick Manson. Sir Patrick Manson, who has there's some relationship here, one with Hong Kong University. So he founded the Medical College for the Chinese, Hong Kong Medical Chinese, which became then Hong Kong University, came back to London and then founded our school. And then also because of the dairy, the ice house is where the milk and the butter from his dairy farm was coming here, so that's a link. I'm here on a brief visit in Hong Kong and in the region because our school, we are really trying to establish far more collaboration in the region than before, and that is starting to work. Now, I was here about, I think, 14, 15 months ago at the height of the Ebola epidemic. Let me see how this works. That's why I switched from engineering to medical school. Okay. I think it's... Yeah. So I was here some time ago, and I was not only declared that, co-discovered Ebola, I was called the father of Ebola. I can't read Mandarin, but which is too big of an honor. Now, Ebola is basically over. It was a wake-up call, I think, for the world in many aspects, and I'll come back to that later. Because you've had SARS with a major impact here. There have been H1N1 and other flu epidemics, no doubt about it. But it's interesting to see how Ebola has caught the global agenda and maybe a game changer, just as AIDS was a game changer and created global health and put health on the top international agenda. And with Ebola now, there are several lessons learned initiatives, and I hope that we will... Yeah, you want to take a picture of that? Is that... No, okay. Now, the epidemic of the moment, and that's is catching our attention, is Zika virus. Zika virus... Most people probably had never heard of it. It was only for the connoisseurs in virology, because it was for many years, in a sense, a virus looking for a disease. It was discovered by accident in 1947 in Uganda, and Zika is the name of a forest, so it looks like. And then suddenly it became, world news. It's related to two other viruses that are better known, dengue, even if Hong Kong has not been really had too much of a problem with it, and chikungunya, which is and also causing some epidemics. This is important to know because they basically cause similar clinical manifestations, and also they're often not always easy to diagnose from each other. Now, as you see here on this map, in 1947, Zika was discovered, and then it took years before it was found again in 71 in Nigeria. So first that was an African affair, and then the first real epidemic or outbreak was in Micronesia, in the Pacific. And the first real epidemic was in French Polynesia. And now, as we know, it moved then to Latin America. Now, when you look at the history here in Asia and the Pacific, there were some isolated cases in Pakistan, small outbreaks, Malaysia, Indonesia. Nobody paid much attention to it. We didn't know where it came from. It is transmitted by the same mosquito as dengue. And then on Yap Island, and I have no clue where exactly that is, but Micronesia, over 70% of the residents had antibodies and were probably infected with it. So that was the first real epidemic, some cases in Cambodia, and then in French Polynesia, there was a true epidemic, and I'll come back to that later. Now, now today, one can safely say that with the exception of Argentina and Peru, the whole of Latin America now is involved in a Zika epidemic. Why is that? Just did it come up now? What is going on? Now, WHO about a month ago declared Zika a public health emergency of international concern. That is a kind of a legal type of term. To declare something a global epidemic. And the reason they're giving was, one, the scale. There are about 1.5 million Brazilians now who have had Zika infection, so that's a big burden of the health system. But it's particularly, but not for the disease itself, because it's a mild dengue plus some rash and that's it. But it's for because of the complications. And because there's growing evidence, and I'll explain a bit more, of that microcephaly, so being born with a small head and skull and brain, and other complications are occurring in babies of mothers who were infected during pregnancy. Some severe neurological damage that we know as Guillain-Barré syndrome, and which can happen after other viral infections. Big economic impact coming at a time when Brazil is already struggling tremendously with a major economic and political crisis, and some trans-border implications. And then we have, of course, the Olympics that are coming up. And why this has happened now, we don't really know. First of all, what are the complications are here in the first place? The most severe ones are about impact on on babies born to mothers. There are precedents of this in medical history or in medicine today. You probably all have heard of German measles or rubella, which has been wiped out not completely, but in many populations thanks to a vaccine, MMR, and which is also causing a very mild infection in adults and children. But if you get it as a pregnant woman during the first trimester, it has severe implications for your baby. And that's why it was also so important to have a vaccine. But this microcephaly may be only the tip of the iceberg, because in general in medicine, when you see a very serious manifestation, a disease expression, it usually means also there are milder forms. And so we haven't seen the end of the story. How strong is this link? Every day I would say that the evidence is growing that Zika is causing microcephaly. Even if there is overdiagnosis, mothers are very anxious and so on in Brazil. So not all cases are actually, could be called microcephaly, but it is, I would say, with all reason, beyond reasonable doubt now that it is caused by it. Now, what is the risk? There's only one study that was published actually last week, the 4th of March, so it's less than a week ago actually, which found that about 30%, 29% of 42 Zika-positive mothers had fetal abnormalities for their babies. And the virus has now been isolated from fetal brain tissue and amniotic fluid. And these are two recent publications. I mentioned them because they're still online only. One is this on the left side, the first paper that documents the abnormalities. Only a few mothers have delivered, and abortion is totally illegal in Brazil, so that's not an option, not a legal option for women. So this is what we are now going through. The second, on the right side, you see a paper that was also came out last Friday, and that shows that in French Polynesia, where they had this outbreak 2 years and last year, no, 14, where they found that the infection with Zika virus was leading to so-called Guillain-Barré syndrome. This is a well-known syndrome in medicine, where but can be very severe with temporal paralysis. Most people recover, but some don't. And so this is what they found in Polynesia, and where they estimate that the risk is about 1 in 4,000 people can develop that complication. And again, here, the question is, are there other neurological complications? Here you see the curve of, in dark red or brown, the cases of Guillain-Barré syndrome, and in lighter, in pink, the cases of Zika infection. And there's really was a small epidemic of that, because that's a quite rare complication in general. Now, let me see you, sorry. What can we do against it? And in an ideal world, we would have a vaccine. Everybody's, protected then, but we're not there yet. And the first thing, since this is a mosquito-transmitted infection, it's through mosquito vector control. That's easier said than done. You have individual protection with repellent, which can be very effective, bed nets, and then fumigating, and particularly cleaning up the environment. Zika infection in Brazil and many parts of Latin America is a disease of the poor, who live in slums, who live near stagnant water, where there are tires, where there are cans, of water, and so on. And so that's a real key. And so in the long term, it's really important to have this vector control, not only for Zika, but for other infections. What can we do? First of all, we need to know. And that means that we need to be able to diagnose it. Hong Kong, that's no problem. First-class labs here to do this. But in many countries, it's not there. And we have an additional problem that the laboratory tests to document past Zika infection are not always very accurate. Vector control is the most important thing. Prevention for pregnant and other women. So there is one travel advisory that the WHO issued, and also your Center for Disease Control. And I should say here, I've been very critical of WHO and its poor response to the Ebola and slow response to the Ebola outbreak. I think in the case of Zika, they really have learned the lesson and took it on. So that's always great to know that we all learn from our mistakes or inadequate actions. And so the a travel advisory for pregnant women and women who may become pregnant, not to travel to areas of, you know, where Zika infection is endemic. You can say that's maybe a bit of an overreaction, but I know every pregnancy is so precious that one cannot take the risk. Clinical care and health services capacity, because, you know, just imagine suddenly, and as you've seen it here, 1.5 million cases, plus all the other people who are worried and who have maybe fever and something that looks like Zika, the healthcare systems are completely overwhelmed. Communication and education and real balanced communication is not always easy. We saw that with Ebola, for example, where one nurse in, in Houston, Texas, the kind of the hysteria that occurred in it with 24-hour coverage of the, you know, the hospital and so on, was not exactly helpful, plus then all the attention to the dog of this woman that that generated more tweets than the nurse who unfortunately was infected. International collaboration is really key, and access to data, sharing of the information, and then I'll come back to the research. And why am I putting here research? Not because I'm a researcher and a scientist, but this is an example of an epidemic by a virus that has been around for many years, but we simply not paid attention to it, and we don't know the answer to many questions. The first one being, why now? Why is this causing this epidemic? Is this a new virus? I mean, is the virus evolved and become more either virulent or easier to transmit? Is maybe the mosquito, the Aedes aegypti, has that become different? We don't know. Is microcephaly caused by Zika? Beyond doubt. As I said, every day nearly the evidence is stronger. But when is it? Is it when any time during pregnancy, only the first trimester, as we see with some other viruses? How often does it happen? What is the risk? This one study, a small study, 30%, but that may be have been a very biased sample and so on. Same thing for the neurological complications. Again, we're getting closer to it. We urgently need more accurate diagnostic tests. That would be my number one priority in terms of tools. then you can see here the rest of the list. And the last point is vaccine development, because it's a vaccine that we will need. Now, the Ebola outbreak, one of the silver linings of the outbreak in West Africa was that for the first time ever, there was biomedical research going on. Treatments were tested out, and new vaccines, which is very, very complicated to do in under times of very risky and highly infectious epidemics. Sorry. And three companies, Merck, Johnson & Johnson, and GSK, invested in an Ebola vaccine, even knowing that there is no real market for that, that at the best case they can hope a return of the investment at neutral cost. There's clearly our research and innovation system is not fit for purpose when it comes to this kind of epidemics where there's no market incentive. And so one of the lessons of the Ebola epidemic that we try to take seriously is to develop a system of public-private partnerships where there are incentives for those who produce vaccines, biotech, universities, big pharma, that they will do it. Our school has been extremely active in terms of the Zika epidemic in Brazil particularly, where we have several colleagues who are there also building on a long-standing relationship we do have with Brazil. Many of their epidemiologists and public health officials were trained with us, or we're in collaborative research, so that helps. And trying to answer all these questions, including here, for example, learning about mosquito behavior, which is definitely not my specialty, but which really is important for developing new strategies. And to the end now, what does this mean for this part of the world? Are we at risk? What is the risk for China, for Hong Kong? And first of all, obviously, here you are a major, major center of travelers from all over the world. So there will undoubtedly be import cases. But the key question is whether can it become endemic? Can it be establishing itself here? And that depends in the first place of the vector. Are the right mosquitoes here? And up to now, you've been quite maybe a combination of lucky and not having, and the weather and so on, not having the right vector, dengue has not been established itself here, despite the fact that in many of the surrounding, countries in the region it has, because the predominant mosquito here has the name Aedes albopictus, which is the one in a bit darker yellow, and they are green. Whereas it's Aedes aegypti, the Egyptian Aedes, that is the most common vector. And here, work done at our school, we try to see where are these mosquitoes occurring. And so you can see that it's mostly south of here, definitely. The whole of Africa, the whole of Latin America, southern United States, some parts of Europe. But here at the moment, it's the wrong mosquito, but which may be a transmitter but less effective. So we'll see. But in Asia, Zika has been here. It will be hard to avoid the introduction. So historic cases, in many places the vector is there. And there have been imported cases in China now, mostly coming from Africa, and one indigenous case in Laos. But I think we're only at the beginning. And on the other hand, you have some of the best labs here in the world to deal with this kind of epidemics, based on your experience with SARS and H1N1. But in general, I would say as a conclusion that this kind of infections, and they're all, except for Zika perhaps, a zoonotic disease, they come from animals, they're going to grow. Even if in Hong Kong today, diabetes and so on, and cardiovascular disease are the main causes of death and of morbidity. It's these very disruptive epidemics will occur, and particularly because of mobility, demographic change, and so on. Now, lessons learned. There are four reports have come out now from the Ebola outbreak, and they're very relevant for Hong Kong and relevant for Zika. One I chaired, that was between Harvard University and the London School of Hygiene Tropical Medicine, and about 4 weeks ago, one by the United Nations, chaired by President Kikwete, ex-President Kikwete from Tanzania. And one quote here, this is from this UN report, which is called Protecting Humanity from Future Health Crisis. And their major statement is that the high risk of major health crisis widely underestimated, and the world's preparedness and capacity to respond is woefully insufficient. So let's hope that these epidemics now are a wake-up call to put in place everywhere the systems that will make us better prepared for earlier detection and also for better response. Because add here for it's my memoir, it's called No Time to Lose. And in the case of epidemics of infectious diseases, one of the key issues is to act early because it's contagious. So if you can, nib it in the bud or act and control it very early on, you can prevent major, major epidemics. And that's what I think is one of the lessons, that this is not just a matter for doctors and, people like me, but has become an issue for national security, and President Obama launched a global health security initiative that's now been joined by many countries in the world, including China. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Professor Piot. Why don't I start with just a couple questions. First of all, actually, looking at your map of the world for which types of mosquitoes there were, it almost looked as though Taiwan and Hainan Island do have the type of mosquito that are vulnerable. And I'm thinking last summer they had many thousands of dengue cases in Taipei. Are you more concerned maybe on Taiwan and Hainan than you are on the rest of southern China?
Yes, at the moment I think that's correct. But we also are in the times of climate change, of changing these mosquito populations. They're moving, and they're changing, particularly in function of climate change and all that. So it is safe to assume that there will be that the Egypti will also move to these places, to southern China. And then the other type of mosquito, Bobictus, that you have here, the jury is still out whether it can transmit Zika. It is probably less efficient, though. But it's, I think we, the issue with Zika is that even the specialists, we have more questions than answers at the moment, but that's, but yeah.
Should the Olympics go ahead in Rio in August?
The best case scenario is that by then about every Brazilian will have had it and will be immune, and there won't be any virus circulation there. But who knows? Because that's what's happened in the few outbreaks that we've seen. But was the size, was far more limited. I think that. Coming back to what I said in terms of travel advisory, if I were pregnant, then I wouldn't go there. But I wouldn't postpone it at the moment, no. I don't think that's a realistic proposition. But the authorities have to continue to invest more into environmental sanitation and so on. I mean, it is the, as I said, the favelas, it's environmental cleanup that is very, very important. And that's actually also the case for, like, when the sailors were complaining about the quality of water in there. So it's that's where Brazil has to show that it means business.
Should Brazil start using DDT, a very strong pesticide against mosquitoes that some people have called for reviving, but which other people have warned against on environmental grounds?
Yeah, DDT has been shown to, to come up in breast milk, for example, and can be damaging for health. But I think in this case, I wouldn't mind using DDT in selected cases. We have to see first with the current approaches, can we control the mosquito population? But one could spray the inside of houses and so on. But now mosquito control is not just spraying and all that, because that only deals with the mosquitoes that are flying around. You also need to go to the larvae and so on. But I think this is a case of such magnitude that one has to use all possible means. But there are also experiments now with, genetically modified or sterilized mosquitoes and so on. So I think this is, so often as a crisis, this would be for me the way to test out new ways of for mosquito control that then could be very useful for later on. But we need to innovation, that's for sure.
I know that this afternoon you're going to be working in the research lab of Dr. Malik Peres, Hong Kong's probably best known virologist. Dr. Peres, what, if any, suggestions do you have for dealing with this in Hong Kong? And for example, as Hong Kong media begins thinking about the teams they're going to send to the Rio Olympics, do you think they should take precautions, including when they return, encouraging bug repellent use and so forth? Dr. Peres.
Yes, thank you. I think in regard to the threat to Hong Kong, it is not at all surprising that we might have a returning traveler coming from South America with Zika. And then you have the problems associated with, if it happens to be a pregnant woman, the problems associated there. If it is a man, the possibility of sexual transmission, and the possibility that actually the virus can persist in the semen for many weeks and months, and making sure that, you know, how you respond to that. So that is a very likely possibility. The second question is whether if we have a returning traveler with Zika, whether the virus will get established here. And I think, as Peter pointed out, we do not have the Aedes aegypti mosquito. So the chance of it becoming endemic in Hong Kong, I think, is much less. But again, the virus has been detected in this other Aedes albopictus mosquito in some parts of Africa. But again, as Peter said, we really don't know whether this Aedes albopictus, which is found in Hong Kong, is how efficient or inefficient it is. So this is another major knowledge gap in our region. So, I mean, I think for Hong Kong, we have been living with dengue in our surroundings, chikungunya in our surroundings, and neither of them have got established. So I think if we have a bit of luck, I don't see that Zika will be a problem, you know, becoming endemic here. But nevertheless, I think it's good practice to make sure that we use mosquito control measures, because as you know, these mosquitoes breed in man-made environments. I mean, man-made containers that we throw about, tins, tires, and flower pots with water collections. These are the places where these mosquitoes breed. So I think taking best precautions to eliminate these makes good sense. I think your final question was about
should the health department have any outreach? I mean, I'm just thinking, why would you get people going to Brazil this summer? And of course, all the Hong Kong media will be sending teams to the Olympics as sort of groups of people going.
Well, I mean, Peter was saying, I mean, I wouldn't certainly send a pregnant journalist to cover the Olympics in Brazil. Mm-hmm. You know, I personally, I mean, I would not think twice about traveling to South America. But if you do come, when you do come back, you do need to be concerned that you might have got infected, sometimes even without knowing, because many of these infections are totally asymptomatic. Yeah. So you need to be concerned about sexual transmission if your partner, you know, could be or is pregnant. So that this is, I think, the precaution that has to be taken. And while you're there, it makes sense to take basic mosquito avoidance measures, which is wearing long-sleeved clothes where possible, light-colored clothes, and the mosquito repellents.
Okay. Thank you. Other questions, please? We have a question back in the corner. Please introduce yourselves.
My name is John Simon. It used to be thought that Albopictus was quite an inefficient vector of dengue fever. But last year in Guangdong province, where there is the Aedes albopictus of the Aedes mosquitoes, there were over 300,000 cases in a massive epidemic. And I think that shows that albopictus is quite a good vector for dengue. And I think you may well be surprised and find that albopictus is going to be a reasonably good vector of Zika virus also. The second thing that I want to point out is that I believe we've already had cases of Zika virus in Hong Kong, as evidenced by the fact that over the last 15 years or so, I've seen several cases of dengue-like illness coming from Thailand or Cambodia, who have had consistently negative testing for dengue, chikungunya, and other like viruses. And I believe if I can get hold of some of that serum from those old patients, we'll prove that we've had, these were cases of Zika virus. Hmm. Thank you.
Yeah, interesting. Very. Let's send the sayer to, you have the best man here in the room, Professor Malik Paris, you know, it's, the best lab.
Okay. Next over here, please.
Hi, Dr. Michael Rogers. I just wanted to ask, in the recent epidemic in French Polynesia, were there any cases of microcephaly shown up there?
Yes, there were, and that was the first time it was reported, but they published some of it more in the French literature, so it went kind of undetected. But now they've published some papers on that also, yes. But it's... were anecdotes, and they're now collecting and putting the information together in a systematic way. Yes, it was the first time.
Has anybody done a full gene sequencing of the Brazilian strain versus, say, the original Ugandan strain that might see what it is, or are we still waiting for that?
Yes, there was also published last week, I think, also. You have a so-called African type and an Asian type, but they look similar, like the Asian type is called, but, you know, when it comes to function, it could be that a very small difference in the genome can lead to major differences in pathogenicity, transmission rates, and so on. And so that's a bit early. But there was a call, and that's something that's important, that for rapid and open sharing of information, data, and samples, because during the Ebola outbreak in West Africa, there was some really bad behavior of scientists, institutions, not sharing their data, not sharing the samples and all that. And there was a call led by the Wellcome Trust, Jeremy Farrar, and subscribed by journals, by research funders, that in cases of epidemics, it is absolutely unacceptable not to share that. So we should know soon.
Thank you. Next, here please in the front.
Hi, Dr. Sarah Borwein. I was wondering how you respond to the widely circulating rumors that it's not the virus causing birth defects, it's the larvicide or some other conspiracy theory that,
yes,
that is preventing people from taking the proper precautions.
Yeah, I mean, one, it's always good to look at all, you know, hypotheses, to say so. And secondly, it's unavoidable that conspiracy theories come up. And on the, what is the evidence? It is that when you look at the cases, they have, the pregnancy occurred basically before they started with wide, to say, vector control activities and spraying. So that's something, that's for me the strongest argument. It doesn't, it's not related. And on the scientific side and the medical side, I think is that, as I mentioned, it's not the first virus that causes this kind of complications. I mentioned rubella, but we also have cytomegalovirus and so on. It's not identical, but it's the same. And so it is a very plausible biological mechanism, plus the virus has been isolated from amniotic fluid and from the brain itself from the babies. And so I think for all practical purposes we can discard it, but I mean, your question about DDT and about these are chemicals, and one has to you know, hope that there would be other ways of dealing with vector control than massive spraying of chemicals. In the end, that can't be good. But at the moment, I would definitely prefer that. Thank you.
Over here in the corner, please, and after that, I'll go to the audience.
Hi, good afternoon. Mike Groves. I was very interested to hear about the mention of sexual transmission of, yes, of this virus. I'm not following this incredibly closely, but I do remember there was a case in America where there was some kind of implication that that might be the case. Yeah. Your talk so far has talked about mosquitoes and pregnant women. Could you enlighten us a little bit more about the possibility of a disease like Zika being sexually transmitted?
Yeah, I think as Malik said, that the evidence is growing also that there is sexual transmission, and it's coming from male travelers who came home to in an environment where there are either the mosquitoes are not there, but where their partner became infected. We're waiting for the absolute definitive evidence for that, and that's through typing of the virus. But just as in Ebola that was demonstrated, we have now also evidence that the virus can be detected for months and maybe longer in men who are, for the rest, cured of Zika virus. It's very similar what we observed with Ebola, where we know today that there can be sexual transmission, and actually a country like Liberia, and then also, yeah, Liberia was declared Ebola free, and then it started again after a man who had carried the virus while being perfectly healthy infected a woman, and then it started again. And we see that also the fact that's probably due to the fact that the testes are kind of not reachable by the normal immune response in the body. And so the even if the virus is for the rest eliminated. Same thing in the brain. Think of the nurse in England or in Scotland, the Scottish nurse, who was a year ago was declared totally cured of Ebola, was readmitted in September, I think, with meningitis, encephalitis, with the same virus. And so it's in the brain, the eye fluid, you know, the vitreal fluid of the eye and testes that in the case of Ebola, the virus was, and maybe it's the same thing for Zika, but it's certainly sexual transmission. And that, theoretically, one, you don't need, and you, that can happen in cold climates and in the absence of mosquitoes, that's for sure. Yeah. How effective, how frequent that is, I don't know. We'll, studies will have to find out.
Okay. On the veranda, please.
Hi, this is Joyce from Nikkei Asian Review. Just a question on how do you think social infrastructure, level of governance and democracy with regard to free flow of information will have an impact on the way the disease is spread?
Social, sorry, I didn't, it's the...
Like social infrastructure.
As I mentioned, first of all, that in Latin America, it's often concentrated in the poorest areas of the cities, populations, and that's directly related with poverty, which is a social part of the social system or non-system, and also we know from experience, older days, like for malaria control, also transmitted by another mosquito, that communities can take care of their environment, clean it up, make sure that containers are not there, that there is kind of a social norm that it's not cool to have that, and it's not acceptable, because that's not only a matter of cleanliness and so on, but it's a risk for the whole population. And then the support to people, not only to mention then the support to you know, families who you know, where a baby with microcephaly is born and with neurological maladies, that requires quite strong support. So as usual, and I would say also communication, be it from social media or others, to say what is there. It can amplify the conspiracies. It can transmit the right information.
She also mentioned democracy. So certainly nobody in Hong Kong has forgotten how, in the case of SARS, it spread and was covered up for the first several months in mainland China.
Yeah.
Now, they later introduced a lot of very stringent requirement requiring the reporting of cases, and they seem to have become more transparent on things like bird flu. In the case of Zika, I haven't heard anything out of the Chinese, but I'm not a microbiologist.
Yeah.
How are the Chinese on Zika? Has there been any communication with them or from them? Have you been to mainland China? Are they watching for it in Hainan Island, given that they have that kind of mosquito? What is your sense?
Well, I think, first of all, I would agree that after the initial cover-up, not only of SARS, but in the past of other, you know, viruses and of HIV, there was no HIV in China, quote-unquote, the SARS epidemic really triggered a complete change in policy and attitude, plus the development of an infrastructure of laboratories and so on to deal with, and working a lot with the lab of Professor Paris here. China has reported, I think, about 10 cases of Zika. I haven't seen the latest figures. All import cases. I had somewhere the list. I was on one of my slides, and it's kind of unavoidable. But I don't know. Maybe Malik, have you heard something more recent? I would say, based on recent history and on a good openness about new virus and so on, that's probably okay. It's probably
Okay. We have time for one more. So we have one more hand there. So one more question.
Thank you. This is Marianne Benitez from the Standard. Two questions, Professor Pio. You say, how difficult will vaccine development be for Zika? Because we still don't have a vaccine for dengue, despite so many years of epidemics. And also for chikungunya. So how hopeful are you? And the other thing is, if you know, if it's a mosquito-borne virus, the major factor will be mosquito control. Again, we're not able to control the mosquitoes. So is it possible also, I mean, can you project on whether Asia will be the next one to be hit by the Zika epidemic?
Well, two easy questions. No, there is a dengue vaccine that's on the market now in some countries by Sanofi. But the problem is, one, it's not completely protective, and dengue is quite different, as far as we know, from Zika and all that, because, as you all know, that the when you get a second infection with the different types, there are different serotypes. It's not protective. It makes things much worse. You can have really very severe shock syndrome and all that. There's no evidence that that's the case for Zika. So theoretically, it would be more straightforward to develop a vaccine against the Zika. But the only way to know it is to go through human trials, and we're really not there yet. So the earliest prediction that has been made is that in June, July, one could go for first in humans test. We'll see. I think this is when, if everything goes well, and the way that vaccines are developed is first, you know, in small animals, then you do it in bigger animals, and then the first time in humans, like 30 people, you see are there not severe side effects, what kind of dose to give, and then they go to more people. All this has to be done under the very rigorous scientific, ethical, and safety elements. So we'll see. The key issue is, will there be investment? Who's going to pay for that? And coming back to the fact that we do need an initiative, that public-private initiative, to stimulate the development of vaccines where there is no market incentive. Will there be a big epidemic in Asia? You can also ask Africa. I think that it's safe to say that certainly where the vectors are, you remember my map, that the potential is there. But I'm not kind of into scaremongering or so. But if it can happen in Latin America, I don't see why it cannot happen in other parts of the world. And it can come and go. But we don't fully understand how this kind of sudden outbreak has occurred. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Professor Piot. We'd like to give something to our guests to remember the club by. FCC tie.
Okay.
Thank you all. Thank you for coming. And we hope to see many of you again next Monday on the two National Palace Museums at our next lunch. Thank you. Bye-bye.
Thank you.